From high school baseball to the men's NCAA College World Series to MLB and all the way to the National Baseball Hall of Fame. How will you make your mark in MLB The Show 26? Available now on PlayStation 5, Xbox Series XS, and Nintendo Switch. Rated E for everyone. Officially licensed by MLB Players, Inc.
You've likely heard about the turmoil at CBS News and maybe also heard about the firings at 60 Minutes. But I have a fresh take for you on this and why this story matters and what it tells us about the state of American journalism from an insider. That's me. I'm Jenna. This is Smarter News. We're about quick, concise, nonpartisan news. For a bulk of my career, I was an insider in broadcast television, working as a national news anchor at the top cable network in the nation. And I decided to leave that job to double down on nonpartisan news and independent journalism far before many others did the same. Although I will tell you that there's no real reward for being first. I'm just pointing it out because it gives me a very unique perspective on the state of journalism in America. And what I want to talk to you about today is this story involving CBS, why it matters across the media landscape in the country, and also answer some of your questions because I was very reluctant to cover this story. Oftentimes, the press likes to talk about themselves. The media likes a story about the media. And I was curious about whether or not this story had value for you. But I heard from our community that you are interested in this and you are curious about the state of American journalism and whether or not we are in a time where it is just not possible to access news without partisanship. We stand alone as trying to be an antidote to an overly partisan media landscape. That's what Smarter News is all about. I want you to be able to have both sides of the story, whatever story that is, even sometimes the sides that are universally disliked, because that's really important in the operation of a free press and what I believe about American journalism in general. And what I would like to present to you today is a few different, perhaps controversial thoughts about American journalism, including this one. You may be told constantly that you cannot access nonpartisan news or you are forever being somehow swayed by partisanship in the media. And what I would propose to you is instead that you are more empowered than ever to access information so that you can make informed decisions. There's actually a business strategy behind making you feel less empowered, less informed, when in reality, you have more at your fingertips than many generations of Americans. That's number one. And number two, the American media, specifically American journalism, in my opinion, is infected by an elite celebrity culture that is toxic and is not good for the American public. And we're going to see that on display in some of this story that's constantly evolving at this time of what's happening at CBS. So I spend most of the time in a lane that's just about who, what, where, when, how, and why. That's what my journalism career has been about. But I do have strong feelings about the state of journalism. And this is why we built Smarter News. That's why we're presenting a solution in news, an antidote to the problems that we see, trying to be a solution in a time when it doesn't feel like a lot. And also, I want to rely on my experience, which is very unique, having both lived in the world of traditional mainstream media and then operated away from that, both as a journalist and a boss. And that's the perspective I'd like to share with you today. So a fresh take on a story that a lot of people are taking a look at for many different reasons. And I'm going to start sort of big picture here because to understand what's happening at CBS, we also have to understand who is behind some of these large media companies in America. I worked at Fox News, the news corporation, which is run by the Murdoch family, notorious in many ways. If you say the Murdoch family, people tend to know who you're talking about, a very powerful media family, really internationally. Now, the other family you're going to need to know about is the Ellison family. And the Ellison family is relevant to our conversation today at CBS. I do think it is interesting that even in this time where we're talking about a lot of big corporations, we're really still talking about family businesses that are in some capacity in charge of the stories that we're hearing, whether it's entertainment stories that we're watching, like movies or television, or also the news program that we're seeing. So you should know the name Larry Ellison. He's the founder of Oracle. He's one of the richest men in the world. His son, David Ellison, is a CEO himself, a media executive himself. And through a different sort of route than his father, who was really based in technology, David made his way in Hollywood and created a large production media company called Skydance. Now, you may not be instantly recognizing that name, but if you ever watched Mission Impossible, some of the recent additions to Mission Impossible and Top Gun, these are Skydance productions. So he's made a name for himself in Hollywood in this sphere of entertainment. His dad separately remains, again, one of the richest men in the world and has also a variety of different investments. And I just want to mention one to you. He's part of an investment group. This is Larry Ellison, the father, in TikTok. And in the deal of trying to keep TikTok accessible in the United States, this investment group was in important with that. So we're seeing this family start to reach into different facets of American media in a way that is raising some eyebrows in certain circles. And the reason for that is that Larry Ellison is often associated with more conservative leaning or Republican support. And his son, David, reportedly donated $1 million to the Biden campaign for president. So when you hear those things, or these big numbers, you think about rich people trying to wield influence. We do know that money talks, and we have to ask the question whether or not that money or that support leads to certain decisions in a trickle-down effect that affects the businesses that they're running and also the products that we're seeing. So if someone, for example, is a big investor when it comes to the Democratic Party, are we going to see products that are more sympathetic to those causes, or vice versa? If someone's a very large supporter of conservative causes, are we going to see that as well? This is why there's been some questions about a recent merger that took place where Skydance bought Paramount. Paramount, you'll likely be recognizing the name. Paramount is another large media platform. We're talking about movies. We're talking about all sorts of different content, but also Paramount, which was also once owned by a big family, the Redstone family, also owns CBS News. And so now Skydance, David Ellison, the son of Larry Ellison, is attempting to buy CBS. Paramount overall, but CBS. And this, again, is raising a lot of questions in the press. This is happening also during the early time of this second Trump administration. So this is happening over the last year. This is also raising some eyebrows because these are large media companies. They have to be approved. There's a regulatory procedure in all of this, and they have to receive approval from the government. In order to get that approval, there's a couple tricky things, including the fact that the president of the United States, as a private citizen, is suing CBS News, specifically a segment on 60 Minutes, for what he says is bias and election interference. In this time where Skydance is trying to buy Paramount, Paramount settles this lawsuit. And some interpret it as trying to buy favor to the administration. So that's the interpretation, that's a perception by some, including those inside CBS News, that are worried that in order to make this deal come together, Paramount's going to try to curry favor with the administration. That's why when you see Stephen Colbert's show ending, who is a critic of the president of the United States, there are those that believe, well, wait a minute, that's not a business decision. That's just a decision to try to get this merger through, among other things. So this is the sort of talk that's happening when these two big media giants are trying to come together. Eventually, regulatory approval happens and the merger takes place late last year. In addition to this, so now David Ellison is in charge of a major Hollywood footprint with Paramount and Skydance, and also this major news organization that, by the way, really matters. CBS News has been a pinnacle of American journalism for a long time, not without controversy, not without its critics. But if you look at some of the shows that journalists within my field would look at and think that's the top level that we could eventually aspire to be part of, 60 Minutes would come up, because 60 Minutes is a magazine show, meaning that there's a little bit extra time you have to tell stories. You have unbelievable resources and reach. And it just has this reputation for being able to do the sort of reporting that most journalists want to be able to do, where you take your time, you have some money, you're able to do some more investigative work, and you have a big platform, a big audience. It feels very consequential. So because this merger is taking place and because there's a concern about perhaps bias, there's a question about what's going to happen next with CBS News. This also becomes a hotter topic because of something separately. The woman you should know, her name is Barry Weiss. Barry Weiss was a columnist for the New York Times.
Real skin results start with one daily ritual. Meet Daily Microfoliant from Dermalogica. This iconic exfoliating powder activates with water to gently polish away dullness and uneven texture. It leaves skin instantly smoother and more luminous while supporting your skin barrier. Formulated with professional expertise to deliver visible results daily, even on sensitive skin. Discover your healthiest skin today. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at checkout for an exclusive gift with your $65 purchase.
Times. And she was a writer that was a little bit an outlier in an editorial environment where most of the columnists tended to lean left, be more progressive. So she's a conservative voice. She decides to leave the New York Times in a highly public way where she says, there's bias here. I'm leaving. I'm starting my new platform, which she does. Her platform, the Free Press, grows in notoriety because she's able to attract a lot of her fellow columnists that maybe didn't feel like they were able to write what they believed or the news analysis that they wanted to and contribute to this growing platform that continues to be a leader in this space of news analysis, editorial columns. It's not exactly like the Associated Press. It's not the same thing as a newswire where you get the who, what, where, when, how, and why. But it's powerful in that it's a place that a lot of people turn to get ideas. What are some opposing ideas, for example, on a topic? And this highlights, again, a more editorial or columnist point of view rather than traditional journalism. So she grows this platform, and guess what? David Ellison, who's now the new owner of Paramount and CBS News, hires her. Not only hires her, but buys her platform for $150 million last fall, and she becomes the new editor-in-chief of CBS News. This again raises eyebrows because she's associated with more conservative-leaning press. And so now, is this another sign that this is the direction that CBS News is going to go? Separately, I just want to put this on your radar because I think it's important for you to know who is behind the money of news in America. I mentioned the Murdoch family. Now I'm mentioning the Ellison family. There's also a question about whether or not the Ellisons are going to buy Warner Brothers, which owns CNN. So now this is another reason to be aware of what's happening here and raise that question, which many of you have asked, which is, what does this mean about the state of American journalism and the pillars that we once depended upon or thought were supplying really important investigative work? Does that mean these are going to change and this is not where we're going to turn to get nonpartisan news? This is where do we access? If these are the big guys in town, are these big guys all turning more partisan, perhaps? Have they always been partisan? It's taking us to give a new look at this journalism landscape. So hold that thought for a second because we're going to get into the firings at 60 Minutes. But in order to take a look at that, I also want to give you some really unique insight into broadcast television. Because now when I talk about broadcast news and television news, I feel like I have to say back in prehistoric times when I was on television, but it does feel that way. For 10 years, I was a national news anchor at Fox Business and Fox News. 7 of those years, I was on a program on Fox News in the middle of the day. I was a co-anchor of a program 2 hours a day, 5 days a week. The goal of this program was just straight news. If there was a tornado, we were going to cover it. If there was something happened on Capitol Hill, we're going to cover it. I did interviews with doctors on news studies or the police officer who saved a child. And we had this really fun, interesting show. But it was very, very clear that the network was moving towards more partisanship. Fox was associated with more conservative programming. And so even though my show and my job was relatively immune to that because we were just doing the live news that was taking place, I could tell that the island I was on was shrinking and shrinking and shrinking. And I love nonpartisan news. That's why I'm a journalist. And that's one of the reasons why I made the decision to walk away and to try to figure out a new path in journalism where I feel like it could actually be in service to the public. However, that insight into a newsroom, I want to share with you, because there are some perceptions of newsrooms similar to other industries, right? You see television shows on how things work that may be wrong. They give us some guidance to what we're going to hear from Scott Pelley in his interview. So Scott Pelley just got fired from 60 Minutes. This made a lot of big headlines because he's one of the lead anchors. He's been there for just under 40 years. He's been one of the major faces of the program, and he's speaking about what's happening behind closed doors, and he's trying to alert everyone. He's trying to raise the alarm that something's happening at CBS that he doesn't like, that he thinks is going to be bad for the country. But let's talk about the newsroom real quick, because there's a lot of comparisons between journalism, broadcast, television journalism, and all sorts of different things. You're going to hear this from Scott Pelley. What I'd like to share with you is that in my experience, and one thing that I always had in the back of my mind is that as a news anchor, although it was a very specific, narrow role, there's only a handful of national news anchors in the country. Even with that being true, even though that it was a high-profile position, it was also a precarious position where you could be easily replaced. There's high risk, high reward for being in broadcast television, especially in quote-unquote the golden ages when I was there, where television still felt like it mattered. Now we're producing for the screen, but really it's the screen in your hand, not in the television, because that's not where you're turning for information. But I like to think about broadcast journalism sort of the same way that I think about athletes, professional athletes. It's a very similar system. There's very few places in a professional life in America where you could have a relatively high profile position where you're the person on the field representing a lot of people that you may not see. You know, if you're a professional athlete, there's coaches behind you, there's a lot of support team, but you're the one on the field. And if you make a bad move, well, you could be fired. Same is true, by the way, with television journalism, specifically broadcast news anchors. You have a contract for 2 or 3 or 5 years. That's great, by the way. A lot of journalists don't have that. In television news, you do. But also, there is this, again, this reality that you could be replaced. And that depends on your coach or your editor-in-chief or your executive producer, who is the one that is running the team. And for example, in a sports team, if you have a coach that's running, let's just use a football analogy. I'm a daughter of a quarterback, so we're going to use that. Let's say that you have a quarterback and you're running an entire offense and this quarterback being able to throw, you know, downfield, and you have the whole team set up for that. But suddenly you start losing and a new coach comes in and that new coach says, guess what? We're going to do a running offense instead. That quarterback that was probably pretty solid gets pulled off and gets replaced with somebody else that has a different style, different look, different technique. That's also true with television news. So yes, at one time, the value that I had to my team at Fox News was specific. Someone likes me in the executive offices and thought I was worth a shot. They liked the way I looked, the way I talked, my tone, the way that I behaved. That's how I got that spot. Also, hopefully I was talented and a good journalist, but there was a lot of things going into that. And I knew deep down though, if someone high up in the business decided to make a change, let's say they just wanted a brunette. They didn't like a girl with freckles. They wanted somebody else. That I would be out in a second, because that's the way the business works. It is cutthroat in a lot of ways. And that is the nature of the television business. So what CBS has going on, especially with 60 Minutes, with the people that are there for decades and decades and decades, is highly unusual, but it's also not industry standard. And so that's why I wanted to give you this little perspective of what it's like to work inside the news business, specifically broadcast journalism. There's a lot going on behind the scenes. I did not have direct contact, for example, with the Murdoch family about the decisions I was making on the air. But you better believe it, if there was a story where, in general, the network thought, that's not the story we want to prioritize, we heard it as a team and we would have to adjust. Now, you always have to ask that question about whether or not that was fair or good for the audience. But that is the nature of the news business. These are not nonprofits in most cases, especially in television, broadcast news. And there's corporate decisions that are impacting what's happening in this professional environment and some of what you're seeing on the air. Just a note, I never felt any political or partisan pressure. Early on in my career, I asked a lot of questions about certain segments we were doing and why we were doing them and the value of them. And pretty soon I didn't get handed those segments anymore because that wasn't where I excelled. And also, that's not sort of the perspective that I lived in. So if it was a more partisan segment, that wasn't coming to me. It's coming to somebody else. And that's how some of these decisions are made. Sometimes they're very overt, in other ways it's not. So I was really focused on the work that I could do, what I can control, and what I was contributing to the audience and making sure it was fair and balanced. That was our tagline at the time. It is no longer a part of the Fox News tagline. So I just wanted to give you a little bit of that because it is a very unique space to be a part of, to be able to work as a journalist in broadcast news. It was a privilege. I loved it in so many ways. And yet I also knew it was broken and that there was something happening inside this class of journalists and media executives that wasn't good for the viewer. And I wanted to do something different that felt more aligned with my integrity. And that's one of the reasons, there's many, but there's one of the reasons why I started Smarter News. Part of that decision, by the way, though, leaving a job that was high profile and in many ways a dream job, led to a domino effect, which meant that we had to leave New York City, a city that I love. We couldn't afford to live there anymore. Made some big changes, ended up moving outside of Austin, Texas. And that distance was critical because I felt certain things about the media at the time. But sometimes you need that distance to really get the perspective. And one of the perspectives that I got now as an audience member rather than someone on the inside is the patronizing nature in which the media can speak to the American public. The way that tone or even sighs or breaths or eye rolls or side eyes can come across as a biased press that wants the public to believe something. Even if they're trying to present two sides, it's clear which side the media stands on. And that sort of patronizing language, that patronizing tone.
Real skin results start with one daily ritual. Meet Daily Microfoliant from Dermalogica. This iconic exfoliating powder activates with water to gently polish away dullness and uneven texture. It leaves skin instantly smoother and more luminous while supporting your skin barrier. Formulated with professional expertise to deliver visible results daily, even on sensitive skin. Discover your healthiest skin today. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at checkout for an exclusive gift with your $65 purchase.
Just further affirmed for me that the traditional mainstream media is not the place where journalism is going to grow. And that's one of the reasons why I'm doing this today. So let's talk a little bit about, though, what we learned from Scott Pelley at 60 Minutes. So he ends up sitting down with the New York Times just recently. He gets fired. It's a very big news story. This is on top of all the other news stories coming out of CBS. This is in the same sort of news cycle that not only are there some additional layoffs that are happening at 60 Minutes, there's a new executive producer announced who's replacing someone that's been at 60 Minutes for 30 years and who is a daughter of a major correspondent. The new executive producer, his name is Nick Bilton, and he is a well-known journalist who worked for the New York Times at one time and also did a lot of investigative work, especially when it comes to technology. So he's not a traditional broadcast journalist. He's someone else entirely, and he's going to come in and he's going to be the new executive producer of 60 Minutes. The dust-up, if you will, that happens between him and Scott Pelley, Barry Weiss, and some of the leaders at CBS is what leads to Scott Pelley's firing, according to these accounts that we've seen. So now Scott Pelley is sitting down with the New York Times, and I've pulled a few sound bites from his hour-long interview with the Times that covers a lot of topics, because I want to pull these out to pause us for a second to think about what he's saying about American journalism and how this affirms the fact that we do have a problem with journalism today that we need to help solve. Here is Scott Pelley describing what it's like to leave a job that he's had for nearly 40 years.
Emotional level. The best thing that I can imagine in terms of describing it is that it's like your spouse was murdered. There's some moments of the day I feel fine. There are some moments of the day that I just frankly fall apart when I least expect it. Not that there's any particular trigger. But I do want to be clear that I do not feel sorry for me. I don't care about me. I'm fine. I care about these people that I left behind, the people who are still trapped there, and this institution that I love so much.
So let's just pause there for a second. First, I just want to clarify the word trapped. In a newsroom, to my knowledge, no one is trapped working in a newsroom, even though there are contracts, including for producers, by the way, who are assigned to, at times, depending on their level, 2 to 3 to 5 year contracts as well. There's always the ability to not renew your contract or to decide to part ways. So this idea of being trapped in one of the number one news organizations, the most high profile program in the country, is something that we should raise an eyebrow to. And again, want to share with you a little insight into that. Also, Scott Pelley comparing this to a murder of a spouse and saying that he feels fine one minute, but then feels bad the next, he's clearly thought about that, but it does give us some perspective into how he's feeling at the moment here and the loss that he's feeling and the grief he feels over what he believes is happening to this program. But he goes further to describe his role as a journalist. And I want you to really listen to the language that he uses in these two following sound bites.
Newsrooms are sort of like the military or the police or the beautiful people at the FDNY down the street. It is a life-threatening job in many instances. And very strong bonds, very emotional bonds are found or are developed in that kind of setting. And to have people running CBS News who don't know that, have never felt that, and don't understand it is a tragedy I never expected to see.
Let's continue with this soundbite, then we're going to talk about this.
I've never worn the uniform, but I've been in combat for this country in Afghanistan and Iraq, Kuwait, been shot at, spent nights in foxholes filling up with water in the desert. I'm not aware that the President of the United States has ever done any of those things for his country. Please correct me if I'm wrong. You become a journalist because you love the First Amendment. You become a journalist because you love the country. And while all the other descriptions that the President used about me might be applicable, not that one.
This is why Americans do not trust the press. Let's dissect what he's saying here and acknowledge the emotion that he is also feeling at this moment. Clearly, this is a devastating time for him. And I also just want to acknowledge that as a young journalist, I looked up to all these journalists at 60 Minutes. And many of the journalists at CBS News for the work that they do and continue to do at programs like 60 Minutes or CBS Sunday Mornings, for example. So I say this with compassion, but also clarity. When a journalist says that they've been in combat, that is actually inaccurate. There are journalists that are embedded with combat forces. You can be embedded as a journalist into a war zone, but you are not in combat because that's a job for the military. To say that I've been in combat is an inaccurate statement. And when you say things like that, if you're loose with your words in these moments, it's where the American public starts losing trust with how you're describing other situations, because this is your own story. And you're describing it in a way of saying that you were in combat, but you've never worn in the uniform. You got to be really careful here. Same thing is when you're talking about a newsroom being similar to the police or the firefighters. I understand what he's trying to express there, which is that there's great camaraderie, especially in high-stress environments where you're handling very important things that are happening around the world. Absolutely, you have relationships that really matter. But you also, as a journalist, did not sign up to wear the uniform like those others did. And you, for example, if you come into a war zone, get to leave, not like the people that have been deployed for weeks and months and sometimes more than a year into these areas who have promised to serve the United States. So we have to be very careful. This is what I'm talking about with celebrity culture or elite culture, of conflating these things and presenting ourselves like heroes to the American public, when really the American public gets to decide that. And I really do take issue as a granddaughter of a war correspondent in World War II, who has always admired and thought the war correspondents are some of the most incredible journalists ever. I always wanted to do that. I never had the opportunity to do it. I admire them in a way that's hard for me to articulate. But the war correspondents that I trust and know would never say that they were in combat. They would say that they reported in a combat zone, but those are different things. You got to be really careful with your language. This is how we lose the trust. These are the small things that matter that exemplify a bigger issue. This is why I wanted to pull that out. It also gives us an idea on how Scott Pelley sees himself in this environment. And this is where there is an issue. It can be his opinion, and it also can be my opinion as someone who's also in journalism, that this is one of the problems with American journalism today. So this interview weaves in and out of a lot of different things. He talks about the first time that he meets with Nick Bilton, who is this new executive producer. And I just want you to hear how he describes this, because what we may think is acceptable inside of a newsroom may be different than what actually is. So listen to this exchange.
At that meeting, you spoke up very forcefully. You asked him why he'd taken the job, knowing, and this is a quote, that you will never be welcome here. Why did you decide to have that first interaction with your new boss in public and not behind closed doors?
It wasn't in public. It was behind closed doors. I was with my family in a closed room. None of this was meant to be public. But, Lulu, imagine I'm walking into this room with these people who have devoted their lives to 60 Minutes. They have not received any kind of explanation.
Real skin results start with one daily ritual. Meet Daily Microfoliant from Dermalogica. This iconic exfoliating powder activates with water to gently polish away dullness and uneven texture. It leaves skin instantly smoother and more luminous while supporting your skin barrier. Formulated with professional expertise to deliver visible results daily, even on sensitive skin. Discover your healthiest skin today. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at checkout for an exclusive gift with your $65 purchase.
They are waiting for Barry Weiss to walk in the room in the hope that she's going to explain why this tragedy has occurred and why it was so necessary. And I'm waiting to see who comes in, and it's Nick Bilton and one of Barry's deputies. No Barry. People are a little shocked by this. As we're standing in there, Nick makes his way to the front of the room and does something absolutely jaw-dropping to me. He pulls out his phone and begins reading a statement off his phone in a room full of 50 heartbroken people.
So he's describing what takes place here, and clearly he doesn't like the style of this new boss that's showing up. But that's critical. This is a boss. Even though the broadcast journalist is the forward-facing person of the show and someone with Scott Pelley's experience and the fact that he's a veteran journalist here, he does not exceed the boss. And the fact that he would say in front of the entire team, you're never going to be welcome here, is not going to be something that's acceptable in any newsroom I've ever worked in. And I do take that notice of, okay, I never worked at CBS and I wasn't a part of the elite 60 Minutes team. But hearing that as a journalist, I'm surprised he wasn't fired on the spot. There's a lot of conversation and debate that happens in a newsroom, especially over stories. We're going to talk about that in a second. That sort of tension is good because you want people to be passionate about the stories that you're telling and different sides to it. But when it crosses over into something else where there's personal insults about someone's leadership, that's not where this can go without some consequence. And clearly the consequence here was Scott Pelley being fired. That said, there were some things that were a precursor to this that I want to talk to you about now. And this gives us an idea of how a story is presented to you on the air and provides some insight into 60 Minutes. Again, there's a concern about bias, what's happening here. Scott Pelley is describing an interaction that he had somewhat with Barry Weiss, although not directly, and how was to work in this new environment. He says that he had a piece ready to go about the protests in Minneapolis involving ICE, Border Patrol, and the death of two Americans, Renee Good and Alex Peretti. You're very familiar, I'm sure, with these names. This was a highly volatile situation, hugely controversial. And Scott Pelley says that he was trying with his team to make sure that they were balanced, to make sure that they showed that the protesters went right up into the line of what was appropriate as protesters, similar to the way that without saying it, that Immigration and Customs Enforcement was doing the same. He was really trying to be balanced. The story goes through multiple checks and it's put to bed. That's an expression where we say, okay, the story's put to bed. No one's going to touch it anymore. That's the way it's going to air. But at the last minute, within the day of it airing, Barry Weiss writes the executive producer. And this is really critical. We don't know exactly what was said, but the message that was passed on to Scott Pelley was we need more aggressive pictures of protesters. And we also need to say that Renee Good was trying to run over the officer that was in front of her when she was shot. Scott Pelley is taking this in and he's describing how it feels to get this sort of feedback. And here's what he says about that.
There was a thumb on the scale for the president's version of events that I felt was a level of political influence that I had never seen in 37 years at CBS News.
Why was that the interpretation? I mean, could she not have been trying to be fair to the administration at a moment of very high tension?
She could have been trying to be fair to the administration, except I felt that the story was abundantly fair to the administration and to the ICE officers and to the Border Patrol officers who were caught in that moment. We were being told to write a version of events that conflicted with the video account. I couldn't understand that. We had already done, in my view, the important work of journalism to balance the story. Finally, the story was not out of balance. It was not out of balance. But there was a thumb on the scale to push the balance a little further in another direction.
So what happens next? Take a listen.
Deadline was noon. It's now almost 5 o'clock. That's dangerous as hell. And so I decided that I wouldn't do those things. I wasn't going to get in a debate about it. I wasn't going to call Barry Weiss about it. I was just going to refuse to make those changes.
Okay, this is an act of insubordination. I've never heard of that or experienced that myself, where an executive producer or an executive at the network provided some feedback. And I said, I think we're actually okay. I'm just going to air that version. Now, he is describing this deadline, which is really tough when you're on network news specifically, and you're feeding all of this content, quite frankly, all over the world. The deadline really matters because the program is running. So without a doubt, this is a highly pressurized environment. But just so that it's clear, I don't even know of another scenario where that could take place, nor do I know of a scenario that if something was highly controversial in a story, I couldn't pick up the phone and call someone and try to get more clarity, even if it's from a higher executive, to say, can I just be clear about this? Do you want me to say out loud that the president said that this car was going in this direction? Because I also said out loud that it doesn't appear that way in the video. And that can be a difference. Maybe it's not that there was this decision to only give one version of events, but sometimes in the way that a story is told, if you lend your voice to something versus quoting someone, maybe it does feel out of balance. That's why you have multiple people look at a piece, because the way I feel about the story and the way you're experiencing it are always different. And that's the sort of editorial tension that you want in a newsroom to get the best result for the audience. So this is very important. He's putting himself in a position of trying to be a hero in this situation, saying again that he went forward because he believed it to be true. But ultimately, he works for a corporation and works for bosses that had different guidance. And still, there was no retaliation. But this is definitely a pattern of behavior that can't exist in a newsroom, because you cannot have any sort of editorial continuity if you have journalists that are just deciding to do their own thing for whatever reason they think. You still work within an organization. This was a good follow-up question from the New York Times journalists. So take a listen to this and hear the switch now and what Scott Pelley is saying about the leadership of Barry Weiss and what's happening at CBS.
Is it possible to see this as the system working? She had notes. You felt they didn't make sense to take, the piece ran, and there was no retaliation.
Well, it was the interference as a problem, especially a story that's been approved by the top editors. And the bigger problem, Lulu, frankly, is not any kind of political influence. The problem was the incompetence. You don't break a deadline. Now this is 4 hours after. That episode of 60 Minutes came within 19 minutes of not making air. The entire hour of 60 Minutes. It was the night of the Grammys. 60 Minutes was the lead into the Grammys. And we almost didn't have a broadcast. 19 minutes. I can't imagine that's ever happened before. And I pledged to myself at that time that no matter what Barry Weiss wanted to do in a story, I would never break the deadline again, because we put the entire network in jeopardy.
But she runs the network. That's the difference. She actually does run the network. And so this idea of just moving ahead with what's good for the network without consulting the bosses, again, is something that just can't take place. Not in any news organization that I've ever been a part of, from a local newsroom environment to something that was a national news environment. Did you notice that his critique changed from editorial decisions and choices to one about character? It's not about the editorial decisions. It's about incompetence here. It's about interference. But that's exactly what an editor-chief is supposed to do, is interfere and say, did we consider this? Is this hard enough? Do we like this? Is this one moment changing the perception of the audience? And it is also true that in this media environment that we're in, deadlines and what they meant in the past means something very different now, because we can update stories constantly. That actually is a huge problem, because sometimes you don't see those changes and we made a mistake and you got to update a story and be very clear about that. But this is also something that's going to be changing a lot in this media landscape. This idea that a television program has to go on at this hour or else is just not going to be something that we continue to see, not in this news environment anymore. So the reason why I wanted to show you these clips is, with all due respect to the experience of Scott Pelley, how he's presenting himself as a hero, as somebody that's going to be forthright with his decisions and buck his bosses, as, in a way, not, this is a legal term, so I want to be careful, it's sort of protected, like his sort of class of journalists are protected because of what they've done and what they've experienced in the past. That is not reality. Everyone is replaceable. Everyone is replaceable. And if you're a journalist today, with the exception of independent media like this one, you have bosses that pay your check and they impact how you work. It would be great if everyone was doing their own independent journalism in a lot of ways. I mean, think about the freedom there, but that's your choice if you're working as part of a corporation. And in a newsroom, there is structure. And at times you don't love the decisions by your bosses, but you have to decide within yourself whether or not you want to stay or you want to go. And so what I see here is a picture of the American journalist that is not as focused on professionalism and serving the public. He believes he is in his way here. But let's talk finally about that. Scott Pelley says something about journalism, and I really want you to hear this, because I completely disagree, and I'm going to tell you why.
There is no democracy without journalism. It can't be done. And that is why I am a journalist.
Democracy exists without journalism. Hear it from me. I am a journalist. Democracy cannot exist without you. The key for a free press is that we serve a free people, that we present multiple sides of a story, that we're able to investigate without the pressure of politics in order to present to you stories that make up the world that we share. We often call these stories news stories, because these are the moments that, despite all the differences that we have, may be something that brings us together, whether we're talking about an international conflict, about the economy, about something that happened in your community. These are why news stories matter. And what we need to do as journalists is to serve the public. It is true that healthy journalism can support democracy, but democracy existed a long time before 60 Minutes. And what it will rely on is a citizen that feels empowered, informed, and involved with the future of the country. That's what our founders were looking at. They didn't want a press that could somehow be dictated by those in power. They wanted you to have freedom and curiosity to think creatively about what you wanted for this country as the story was just beginning. The story is continuing to develop. And what we need to be for you is a support system, a service, not part of the power class that is looking down on you, telling you that these are the stories that matter most to you, and this is what you should think about them. This has been too far down the road for American journalism that we've continued to do that. And we need to recalibrate ourselves and work with some humility that we don't have all the answers. And our job, while you're out there pursuing your dreams, is to figure out a way to support you, not to have you support us. That's why television journalism doesn't work anymore, because it requires you to show up at a certain time to serve us when we need to actually be serving you wherever you are, however you are, in whatever capacity, so you can get the best information out there. This is also why independent media matters, because these big media families do have a certain point of view. They're going to have a way that they're going to run a business, and that's fine. But variety is important. And so this is why when people say that we're having less access to freedom and a free press, I say, no, we have more access than ever before. You have direct sourcing. You can actually listen to whatever hearing you want to listen to. You can listen to complete speeches. You can have all of this access to all of these different news sites and opinion sites, some left-leaning, some right-leaning. And however that sparks your imagination, your curiosity, that is freedom in motion. Curiosity is the key ingredient to liberty. And the more stimulated you are on that, the better. The risk is, of course, with independent media is that we build the same prisons that we already built in traditional media, which means that more of the conservative sites, more of the liberal sites, less of sites like Smarter News that are dedicated to nonpartisanship and making sure you have multiple sides of the story and something to consider. And this is why I want to leave you with this thought. The power of a democracy is always in the people, even in a free market. So how you spend your time, how you spend your money, who you're watching, who you're supporting really matters. If CBS has made all these moves, brought in all these new people, and nobody watches 60 Minutes anymore, they're going to be fired and replaced with somebody else entirely. That's the way the news business works. And so if you want more nonpartisan news, if you believe in a nonpartisan press, then thank you for being here at Smarter News. Thank you for your presence, because it is powerful. And any way that you can support us really is meaningful, but your presence matters. So thank you for that. And it's something to think about, because the power is not in the broadcast journalist. It's not in the media executive. All of these people are trying to figure out how to harness your power, because they know you're the most powerful, but they don't say it out loud. And I'm sick of it. I'm going to say it here and now. Okay? That's it. You are more empowered, more informed, more inspiring than ever before. And this is the moment we're at in America with great creative disruption. Even though it can be a little scary, a little fraught, there can be turmoil. I'm going to choose to look at it that way. And I'm grateful for this opportunity, because there is very few other places in the world where I, sitting in my office, could be a practicing journalist, where no one tells me anything, I'm not pressured to do anything politically, and can report the news as I see can be a public service to you. So I'm going to continue to work in that gratitude and honor that opportunity. And I'm going to continue to keep everything nonpartisan when it comes to news. When it comes to American media and journalism, I'm very passionate about that, sort of accidentally as an entrepreneur. I never set out to do this. But I feel that I was given the opportunity to see things from the inside, see a problem from the inside, and then have the tools to try to solve it. And that's what we're doing at Smarter News, an antidote to what we see as a celebrity culture and elitism that has infected American journalism, led to more partisanship, less professionalism, and less good for the people. And we're going to move in the opposite direction. So just a few things for you to consider there. Thank you for your support of Smarter News. If you have any questions about what's going on at CBS, any questions about the media landscape, I look forward to hearing from you. You could always email me, hello@smarternews.com. I love hearing from you. And let us know what stories you're curious about next, so we can continue our craft together. Have a great day, guys. I'll see you with more on smarternews.com. Bye.
Real skin results start with one daily ritual. Meet Daily Microfoliant from Dermalogica, This iconic exfoliating powder activates with water to gently polish away dullness and uneven texture. It leaves skin instantly smoother and more luminous while supporting your skin barrier. Formulated with professional expertise to deliver visible results daily, even on sensitive skin. Discover your healthiest skin today. Visit Dermalogica.com and use code SMOOTH at checkout for an exclusive gift with your $65 purchase.